You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
This is the home of the grit grinder.
We do have a little grit and grind when we reach in our pants and pull it out.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Final hour, Overdrive, TSN 1050, now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes and Jonas Siegel from the Canadian Press. The O-Dog will be back in about 15 minutes, and he'll be bringing Bob McKenzie along for the ride and get into the Claude Julien firing down in Boston, where the Bruins go from here, where Julien goes from here. The Leafs are in action tonight. Dallas is in town. Dallas, one of the worst defensive teams in the league, but they can score, and that's essentially how you have to define the Maple Leafs right now, the way they're playing. The past two games have just been high wire acts, but they found a way to get three of a possible 4 points, and yet you still feel cheated because they probably should have picked up both points last night. They had a 4-2 lead and a 5-4 lead with 2 minutes left. But this feels like it could get ugly tonight because you're coming off a six-game road trip. It's back-to-back. Dallas was in Toronto waiting for them last night. You've got your backup goalie playing in Curtis McElhinney. I think if they win, they probably have to win 6-5 again.
Well, I think they've lost 9 of 11 on the second half of back-to-backs. So you're right. It's not really an easy situation when you're playing like this. Do you think there was like, I guess if Anderson had been playing better, I would bet Babcock might have considered going back to him?
I think the reason he played last night was that Babcock conceded that tonight's going to be very difficult to pick up a win.
Or do you think it was because they were playing an Eastern Conference team?
That probably factored in. The Islanders are in the mix now for that second wild card spot, right? The Leafs are chasing Philly. The Islanders are chasing Philly. Now, the Leafs are currently in third place in their own division, but with 31 games left, it could be either door that they end up competing for by the end of the season. I think the fact that it was against the East probably did play a factor in all this, but I think if you're being a realist, coming off a six-game road trip, second night of a back-to-back, when the other team's been in town waiting for you, the best chance that they had over these 24 hours was to win last night. Now, that's not to say they can't win tonight. This would be a big statement game in a season loaded with statement games. And the beauty of the situation they find themselves in right now with 31 games left and they're currently in a playoff spot, every win becomes the biggest win of the season. Every win from here on out is the biggest win of the season.
Okay, so what's the game like if you're Babcock and you can drop the exact kind of game you want to have tonight? Obviously, you want to win. You want to win like just a clean,
I think he'd love a 1-0 win.
Yeah, but
they're not going to do that.
They're not getting that.
You concede 18 shots and you win 1-0 or 2-0. I think ideally that's what he would like to see happen, a low-scoring, defensively-minded game.
But safe game?
He's realistic. Dallas isn't going to be playing that game. They don't know how to play that game. And like Babcock said last night, the Leafs get rolling. They start feeling good about themselves. He compared them to the 80s Oilers. He said everyone's getting their cookies. Everyone's getting their points. And it becomes kind of a shootout, and they don't know how to break out of that mentality. And they're not going to figure that out over 24 hours.
Well, we saw that for years, and it's not the same thing because this team's won, and I think this team's better balanced. But we saw that for years in Edmonton, right? Where it was just like it was freewheeling and open, and you can't win long term like that.
No, you cannot expect to win 5-4 every night or 6-5. That does not happen. But I think they can ride this wave and continue to walk along this wire for another 31 games.
It's a fun wire to walk on.
It's a very
that
fun
game.
Wire.
Like
that's the most entertaining hockey you'll find.
So was Saturday.
Absolutely,
Saturday was a great game.
Those two games are two of the most entertaining games you will ever find midseason in the NHL.
You had absolutely no idea what was going to happen. Like, right when they got the lead back, you're like, they'll
blow it.
They'll probably lose this.
Right. You're never confident. Up 4-1 in Boston, up 4-2 on the Islanders. Never for a second were you confident that they were going to close that game. And that's the Leafs in a nutshell right now. We'll get back into that later in the hour. The parade went down in New England today. Fifth time in, 15, 16 years?
Yeah, it's just a normal thing.
It's become routine. It's routine in Boston for the Patriots to come back and win a Super Bowl. And they started the chants, "We want six." So now they're all jacked up about potentially doing that next year. To talk about the chances of that happening, amongst some other things, we're joined now by ESPN NFL analyst. Here is Trent Dilfer. Trent, have you recovered from that game on Sunday night?
I'm trying to. I'm still trying to process it, to be honest with you. I don't know if anybody has properly explained how in the heck that happened. They accomplished the impossible.
Well, do you naturally focus on how New England found a way to do that or how Atlanta allowed them to do that?
Well, it's a perfect storm. It takes both. I was up in a suite watching the game with Steve Young and Michael Bennett, of all people, Martellus's brother, you know, Michael from the Seahawks. And at 28-3, Michael kind of elbows me and says, "You watch, Patriots are going to come back and win. The Falcons are getting tired." And I kind of thought he was kidding, but he was dead serious. So the kind of the discussion came up, how could it happen? It's not going to, but if by some weird chance, how could this possibly happen? And, you know, Steve and I agree, it'd take a perfect storm. It would take, you know, some type of game-altering turnover by the Falcons. Oh, check that box, 3rd and 1. We're going to take a 7-step drop instead of just running the ball or throwing something quick. It's going to take perfection by Tom Brady and the New England offense. Oh, check that box. They did that. And then it's going to take some horrific game management by the Atlanta Falcons. Oh, yeah, they completed a big ball on the sideline to Julio Jones, 22-yard line with 4-something left to go. Run, 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 kick a field goal. You're up 11 with 3 minutes to go, and you win. Oh, no, they didn't do that. Instead, they tried to throw it on 2nd and 3rd down and a punting and give me the ball back to the Patriots. So kind of check all the perfect storm boxes, and it happened. But even saying that, I still can't believe it. I mean, I still can't believe we got two-point conversions. People forget that. People act as if just getting 2-point conversions is easy. Well, they got 2 of them. And then they get the ball in overtime, and ho-hum, let's just never have a 3rd down. And go down and score a touchdown and have a walk-off, drop the mic, Super Bowl. I just can't. If it was played 1,000 times again in that situation, the Falcons win 1,000 times. It's just those are the types of odds that New England beat the other night.
Because it happened over an extended period of time, does this game management, can it possibly knock off Pete Carroll at the Super Bowl deciding to throw instead of run on the one?
Oh, I think it's way worse.
It's worse.
I don't think it's comparable. There's a lot, you know, throwing the ball on the one, although, you know, we've reduced it down to that conversation. It's been done a lot of times and it's worked a lot of times. Malcolm Butler makes a great play. We know all the reasons why. This was, you have to try to lose this game of 28-3. Like, there has to be almost an intention behind it. And although it was not intentional, what they did was they stayed in this aggressive mindset that had gotten them a lot of success this year and gotten to that 28-3 lead. But at some point, the same thing that makes you laugh makes you cry. And they pushed the envelope of aggressiveness to the point where now it makes them cry. Because if you just take the most remedial, conservative game management approach to the 4th quarter, there just isn't enough time, enough possessions for them to come back against you. And yet you gave them two. You gave them the one on the turnover, but you also gave them another one by punting the ball instead of taking a field goal and going up 2 scores with 4:24. So, which would have been 3 minutes if you run, run, run. So it's mind-boggling. I don't want to take any away from Patriots because that's why I led that way. And I made sure on TV to lead this way. They accomplished the impossible, and they deserve all the credit, but it did take a perfect storm for it to happen.
But right at the end, Trent, like when they're coming back, I didn't have like – usually like there's a little bit of doubt you have that maybe they won't score, maybe they'll stop them here. It just felt like they were going to score and they were going to tie it and that was going to be that. Like, did you have any doubt that once they kept pushing it was done, or did you think Atlanta was going to push back?
I couldn't. I was numb almost. I was down on the field for the last, I don't know, 5 minutes of the game in OT. And I was actually with, just by chance, kind of the New England security guys. They kept asking me, can we actually do this? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. But who's the, I mean, I'm at a loss because it just doesn't make sense. it doesn't make sense how they did it. It breaks all football traditional thinking that one team could do that in a negative way and the other team could do it in a positive way. So again, I didn't really have a feeling just because I was numb to the whole thing. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I couldn't believe that when it went into overtime, we're in overtime. I could even believe less that the Patriots got the coin flip and then that they never had a third down on that drive. For an Atlanta Falcons team to play so well for so long and then not play even close to well at the end is mind-boggling.
With Trent Dilfer, ESPN NFL analyst. So how does Atlanta avoid next year doing what Carolina did this year and taking a serious step back and going from contender to pretender quickly?
I think it's a real danger. I don't think there's anything given to them. I know everybody said how young and talented they are. Everybody's young and talented. They had young and talented players play really, really well. They were all hot together for a long period of time. So don't forget they lost to some pretty average teams midway through the season, too early in the season. So they do have a floor. It's not like they're not like they're a high ceiling, high floor team. They're a high ceiling, low floor team. So when you're that, yeah, you could definitely go back to mediocrity. It wouldn't surprise me one bit. They don't have a ton of difference makers defensively. They're outstanding offensively. However, you know, they also are outstanding from a coordinator standpoint. Kyle Shanahan, he's gone now. Play calling is the secret sauce in the NFL when it comes to offense. Steve Sarkisian hasn't been in the NFL for quite a while. You can't just expect to plug and play coordinators. I personally am skeptical. I'll say this too. Every player in that locker room is listening to all these shows. Every player in that locker room is saying, we just had our coaches take a Super Bowl away from us. That's what the narrative will be. And it's going to be a really, really long, hard process for those players to relearn to trust Dan Quinn again. They'll love him and they'll never say it publicly. But deep down, they're like, well, if we just do what we've been doing, we did everything they asked us to do. And then they put us in this situation to where this team was able to come back on us. I think that's going to be a long, hard process.
All right, let's focus then on the trust in Matt Ryan, because you mentioned Steve Young earlier in the conversation, and Steve was on primetime on Sunday night, and he used the word inexcusable like 15,000 times when talking about how Matt Ryan allowed himself to get sacked twice in the fourth quarter when they were down 16. Well, he got sacked, stripped, which led to them putting up the first 8 points. But then when after the Jones catch and they were on the 22, I can't remember if it was before or after the hold, he allowed himself to get sacked again. And Young said, you simply cannot have pocket presence like that. You have to know to get it away in a situation like that. Regardless of what Shanahan or Quinn are calling for, you have to have more mental awareness. So how does Matt Ryan recover from this situation?
Steve's one of my best friends. We work together all the time. We're together all the time, like brothers. We disagree a little bit on this one. I know where he's coming from, and I don't disagree that the last line of defense is the quarterback's decision-making, and idealistically you would hope Matt Ryan would have better presence, but this is also the most dependent position on in football. You're dependent upon your play caller. You're dependent upon the people around you. You know, he didn't call the 3rd-and-1 7-step drop. Freeman, it's protected in a sense that Freeman has Hightower. And if you look at the replay, Freeman just chooses not to block him. He gets confused and lets Hightower run right by him. It's absurd. So, yes, idealistically, I wish Matt Ryan would have just eaten it or thrown it away. But he didn't, because he trusted Freeman would block, and he trusted his play caller, who just called him to an MVP-type season, that he was doing the right thing. Where I will blame Matt Ryan is this. On 2nd down, with 4 minutes to go, after a -1 rush, when he gets the play on the 22-yard line, when he gets the play call in his ear, whatever the pass play was called, that's where he should have called timeout. He shouldn't have trumped the play caller and waved him off. He should have called timeout, because timeouts are meaningless to the Falcons at that point, and gone to the sideline and said, hey, Dan Quinn, Kyle Shanahan, let's have a little 90-second yoga session here. And I'll get our breath and get in zen moment and make sure we're thinking through this properly. We're up 8 points with 4 minutes to go in the Super Bowl. They have two timeouts. If we run, we have one of the best kickers under 40 yards in the NFL. We run, kick. We're going to have an 11-point lead with either 3:45 and they have no timeouts or under 3 minutes and they have two timeouts. We're going to win this game. We're going to win the Super Bowl if we all could just take a deep breath and not freak out right now. Instead, he didn't call timeout. They chose to throw the ball. He got sacked. Yes, he shouldn't have taken sack, but he did. Then they get the holding call, and then they throw it out of bounds. So it was a perfect storm, and where I blame Matt Ryan is he should have had the mindfulness to say stop the madness and use one of the pieces of ammunition he has in his tool belt, in his toolbox, which is a timeout to get everybody to think calmly and clearly at that moment.
Great breakdown as always, Trent. Great stuff all year, buddy. We love having you on and enjoy the off season. We look forward to picking back up in September.
Thanks, guys. It's been a lot of fun. Really appreciate you guys, and hopefully we'll do it again next year.
You got it, buddy. There he is, Trent Dilfer from ESPN, NFL analyst.
Did you ask him if he got my hoodie? I told you to ask him.
I forgot to ask him about the hoodie.
Come on, Brian. The important questions need to be asked.
I should have asked him about the hoodie. We'll ask him.
No, you won't.
In September, we'll ask him.
You think he'll hold it the whole?
Yeah,
he'll
he's holding it.
He'll hold it for the O-Dog. I should have asked. You should have popped in.
Well, before I left, what is the one thing I said to you?
You said you got to ask him about the hoodie.
If he got me one.
Right. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he probably didn't. I think if he did, he would have remembered.
Who are you getting that hoodie for? Oh, it's one of the guys I do radio with in Toronto.
Some guy up in Toronto.
That I don't even know.
Right. That would have actually been very legendary if he bought you one and sent it with a nice note. Great being on with you every week. Trent.
Your buddy, Trent.
Send the cash to TrentDilfer@hotmail.com. Anyway. All right, Bob McKenzie will join us. Jonas, you're out of here. You're off to the ACC.
I am. Should be interesting.
Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, boys.
All right, buddy. There's Jonas Siegel from the Canadian Press. Bobby Mack in studio. 3 stars later in the hour. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. It's a game night tonight for the Maple Leafs. Dallas is in town. You can watch it on TSN 4. Puck drop at 7:30. Pre-game with the panel at 7. And speak of the devil, two members of the panel are in here right now, including our hockey insider, Bob McKenzie. And the hockey insider is brought to you by Finance It. What's happening, Bob?
Not much, boys. How are you doing today?
Well, we've been talking a lot about Claude Julien, and Owen and I tend to disagree on everything today, actually. We've been sparring pretty nicely. But you want to set it up for him?
I will. The timing of the firing, he thought Claude Julien deserved better. And I said, when you get fired, you're told to get your crap and get the hell out. He was thinking the fans of Boston and the fans of the Bruins should have had some kind of, I'm like, what?
No, because of the parade. It's clearly they knew what they were doing, sure, with the press conference.
So. But when you're fired, you're fired.
Yeah.
There's no recognition element to it.
And usually in a situation like this one, the firing actually comes as a relief because it's been talked about for weeks, months, if not years. And finally it happens. So, you know, Claude, hey, you know, is it traumatic? Yes. Is he over it and ready to move on? Yes. But in terms of the timing, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, they played the Leafs Saturday night. They lost. It wasn't a pretty loss. So, I mean, you've got Sunday. You could have easily done it Monday. But and ultimately, whether it was the phone call was made this morning or late last night, doesn't matter. Here we are, Tuesday, the parade. But it's really weird because when this happened, I thought, I think the Bruins have already had their bye week. And it seems like there's a long time between games. And then it turns out that they just got a natural 4-day break. They played Saturday night against the Leafs. They got Sunday off, Monday off, Tuesday off, Wednesday off. They play at home to San Jose on Thursday night, I believe. And it gives Bruce Cassidy 2 full days of practice. So they, you know, that part of the timing worked for the Bruins on both ends.
Do you think they looked at what Doug Weight managed to do in the Island in terms of them getting sparked and winning games, and they're hoping for the same kind of reaction with their team?
Yeah, I'm sure every you know, people said today they heard Don Sweeney explain why they fired Claude Julien, and they didn't really get a strong feel of why they fired Claude Julien, other than, you know what, in their mind, it was just time. And whether that was Jeremy Jacobs or whether that was Cam Neely, you know, I think Don Sweeney's under a lot of pressure as well, because, you know, where I think there's a disconnect is the hierarchy, that being Jacobs and ostensibly Cam Neely, believe this team is a lot better than they've shown. And there's a lot of other people who believe this team isn't even, you know, it has shown exactly what they are, that they're a team in transition. They've got holes in their lineup. And the general manager basically said that today, and in a number of ways was talking about the problem. And one of the problems he identified was, you know, we may not have all the right players in the right spot. And we'll find out with a new voice. And that's what every team hopes for, is that the new guy is going to come in. And I will say this, not in defense of the Bruins, because I think Claude Julien's such a good coach. If you've got one, you shouldn't get rid of him. But, I mean, they've missed the playoffs two back-to-back years. They're maybe on their way to it again. It's hard to read because they've played so many more games than everybody else. So let's see now. Now we finally get to see if a different voice gets different results, or whether the problem simply is they're a team in transition that aren't half as good as they think they are.
What happens if they end up, I mean, does more guys get fired if they go on and miss?
Yeah, good question. You know, I can't sit here and say Don Sweeney's going to get fired if they miss the playoffs. But I think that mentality that cost Claude Julien his job would still exist to some large degree, that if they expect this team to be better, and then when they make the coaching change, it's not better, and they don't make the playoffs, then, you know, everybody's under.
Someone's got to just look at themselves and say, maybe they're just not that good.
Yeah, but
that's
then
the
that,
toughest thing to do.
You
though,
know, but then that falls back ostensibly to the general manager to some degree, but it also falls back on ownership, because last year, Don Sweeney made moves at the deadline that I'm going to assume were because ownership and the hierarchy of the club wanted to make the playoffs. So they gave up draft picks for Lee Stempniak as a rental. They gave up draft picks for Jean-Michel Lyles. You know, was that sound decision-making? I don't know. I think you could question it. But again, it always comes back to, it's never just the general manager. There's always direction from ownership as to what direction they want to take it. We see that in Vancouver. We see it in Boston. And some of these, you know, some of these teams are in transition that way.
With Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, I think it's very difficult for a management team and a hierarchy to make that decision when they've already been on the job for a while. Okay, we're going to reload here, rebuild, or blow it up. Like with Shanahan, he was so early into the job where he sold ownership on it. He may have sold them on the plan before he even took the gig, or left that door open, said, give me 12 months and I'll let you know how I think we should play it out here. I mean, that's difficult. I would think Cam Neely's been on the job for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the Shanahan point, I mean, you're right. I don't think initially this tear it down and build it back up, that wasn't the original plan. Going out and signing Stefan Robidaux as a free agent, and that wasn't just Dave Nonis saying we need veteran presence in the locker room. I believe that the entire organization from Shanahan on down were fully on board with going down, you know, signing a guy like Robidaux at the time. Then when things imploded, basically, and there was that season, you know, the saluting and you know, Dion became such a lightning rod for criticism. Phil, same thing. Phil sparring with the media. I think Shanahan, at that point, he's like, uncle, now I know what we got to do. And what we got to do is kind of move these guys out,
right,
start over to some degree, and let's get it done. But you're right. The Bruins haven't done that. The Vancouver Canucks have not done that. The Philadelphia Flyers haven't done that. I mean, you know, that would be akin to Ron Hextall saying, you know what, I love all these kids we've got, Konechny and Provorov and Gostisbehere, although he's on really hard times right now. But they've got so many young kids coming on so many different levels, on defense, up front, you name it. They've got tremendous kids in the pipeline. But at no point did he, and obviously before the passing of Ed Snyder, you know, Ed Snyder's mentality was, we got to make the playoffs, and we better make the playoffs. So they weren't saying, you know what, let's move Giroux. Let's move Voracek.
Right.
Let's move Simmons. Let's tear this thing down and really build it all back up. No, it was, let's try and make the playoffs with Voracek, Simmons, and Giroux, and let's bring the kids along as fast as we can and keep sprinkling them in there.
Yeah, but you can never do both. You can never go to make the playoffs and integrate young talent.
You might, when you say you can never do both.
Well, Chicago's done it.
The Flyers might be able to, when I say might be able to do it, I don't believe that they're going to contend for the Cup. I'm not even sure they're going to make the playoffs, but they might make the playoffs. If they had maybe better goaltending, more consistent goaltending, I should say, maybe they would make the playoffs this year and they would and be doing the two things at the same time. But it's really, really hard to do. To your point, I agree with you 100%. And I think that's what's going on in Vancouver right now. You've got an ownership group that wants to make the playoffs, and you've got a management group that is taking their cue from ownership, but at the same time recognizing, we got to get younger. We got to keep filtering the kids in. We got Horvat. We got Stetcher. Maybe we got Triamkin here. We got some of these kids coming. And there's the same sort of thing in Boston. We got McAvoy coming. We got Carlo. We got Pasternak. We're on our way. But, we're holding on to Chara, and we're holding on to Bergeron, and we're holding on to Marchand, and there's no reason why we can't do both at the same time. But it's a hell of a challenge.
Well, I do think it comes down to the core that you already have in place, where Shanahan got lucky because the core here was essentially, in terms of high end, was Phil. Dion was being paid like a high end defenseman, yeah. But he is not, a future Hall of Famer like Chara is. And it became easier because the market had turned on those players to say, okay, once we move on from them, they'll accept that we're going to be awful. Where if you're in Boston, I can understand why you're saying, I'm not trading Bergeron or Marchand or Tuukka Rask.
Right.
I'm not doing that.
The recent past in Toronto was so bleak that a lot of Leaf fans were clamoring for Brendan Shanahan to say, yeah, blow it up, get Phil out of here, get Dion out of here, let's move on and let's start fresh. And that was a receptive audience. Some of them thought they should have done it a long time ago. Whereas you're right. I mean, the Boston Bruins aren't that far removed from winning a Stanley Cup. The Vancouver Canucks aren't that far removed from being in the Cup final against the Bruins. I think in Vancouver, there might be more of an appetite from the fans who recognize that maybe they're in spin-your-wheel mode a little bit. But there's no way. In Boston, where, all it seems like is they have championship parades today, the Red Sox not that long ago, the Patriots, what they've done, how's the hockey fan base going to react if they go, yeah, there goes Chara, there goes Bergeron. We'll keep Marchand around, but, anybody who's 28 or over, we're moving them out for the new regime that's going to be led by McAvoy and Carlo. And, the fans are going to be like, no, we don't want that. That's some bad times ahead.
And you'll get lost.
I always thought
the
fans of Toronto, there was always talk, the city, the market would never deal with a rebuild. Well, if you tell them you're going to do it and do it, they have no choice.
I think if you bat long enough that the fans, you're probably right to some degree, but I think it was a lot easier. I think that season, that last season,
it was so disgusting on so many levels.
It was just such a tire fire that people were just like, enough. Like,
plus,
let's start over.
In Boston, you'll get lost really quickly. If you're saying we're bottoming out, okay, well, I'll go watch Tom Brady win another Super Bowl. Celtics are second in the East.
You have to make an assessment, and you look what Detroit's done. They've been trying to win with an older Zetterberg, an older Datsyuk, and they're not even really close.
Right.
They can get into the playoffs, but they're going to get killed in the
first
round. Well,
I think that's also where, like you mentioned Vancouver, even though, they're their own marketplace, Canada in general is kind of one big hockey marketplace. So if you're in Vancouver, you're seeing what Toronto's doing right now. You're seeing what Edmonton's doing right now. I don't know if that applies in the States. I don't know if Boston fans are focused on what's happening in other markets the way up here. You can't help but be focused on what's happening throughout the country.
To make a conscious decision to go down that road, you might be looking at 5+ years of really difficult pain. And I think in Detroit, they're saying, I don't know if this franchise right now, with the economy being what it is in Detroit, I don't know if we could withstand. What if it takes, the Edmonton one was forever.
Mm-hmm.
How long was Chicago bad before they got good? How long was Pittsburgh bad before they got good? How long was Florida bad before they got more competitive? And a lot of these markets are saying, we're not going to willingly induce a 5 or a 7 year. And people are going to say, well, the Leafs aren't taking that long. Yeah, well, you know what? What if they hadn't won the lottery? What if they didn't get Austin Matthews? What if they were sitting with Pierre-Luc Dubois or Jesse Puljujärvi right now instead of Austin Matthews?
Don't even say that.
How big a difference would that have been? They got Marner and they got Nylander. Absolutely they did. And they'd still be pointed in the right direction. But you take Austin Matthews out of that equation, and that's the difference. And there's some teams that just aren't prepared to go down that road.
With Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. Dallas in Toronto taking on the Leafs tonight. You can watch it on TSN 4. Everyone's talking about the defensive play of this team, and it's been abysmal since the All-Star break. And Freddie Anderson, quite frankly, is scaring people, too, because it's flashbacks of October. I mean, where's your focus at? The defensive play first or Freddie's?
Mostly defensive play, because I look at every goaltender in the National Hockey League, probably outside of Devan Dubnyk, who I don't think he's had a bad patch this year. How's Henrik Lundqvist's year been?
Mm-hmm.
How's Carey Price's year been?
Tuukka Rask.
I mean, up and down. Tuukka Rask. You name me a goalie, a good goalie in the National Hockey League, and I'll show you one that has gone through stretches of exactly what Freddie Anderson's going through. And I'm not saying Freddie Anderson's Carey Price, because he's not, and I'm not saying he's Henrik Lundqvist. But I think he demonstrated after an initial slow start that he's a capable, competent goaltender who's probably played too much.
Mm-hmm.
And we get McElhinney tonight, and they probably need to be able to play their backup goaltender a little more often. And we'll see, But I'm not the sky is falling, the goalie's no good kind of guy. Wow, they're really playing some bad defense. You know, and we talked about it on SportsCenter, and O brought the video evidence. But I was watching it last night. I mean, on that first goal, Riley is... The gap control has been so bad. He's backed off so far that they made an easy entry, and he was slow to get to a rebound, and the guy jumped it in. On the second, third, and fourth goals, every one of them started the same way, with really a feeble battle and compete below the goal line on 50-50 pucks or pucks that they could have had. And then it's not just the lack of the battle on the boards. The inability to check, so to speak.
It's horrible.
And that, but as soon as they get out of, we lost the puck because we didn't check very well below the goal line, and we weren't willing to physically engage at all. Then it becomes now we're lost in our coverage, and everybody's all over the place. Looks like a fire drill.
It really
They're
is.
Just running to and fro, and there's, you know, on some of the goals, it's three Islanders right in front of the goaltender with everybody too far up. On some of the other goals, it's the Leafs collapse back down in front.
But don't take anybody.
With a guy in the slot. It's just like it's one or the other, but their zone coverage has been terrible. So, I mean, that's on the players, that's on the coaching staff, that's on everybody. But it all starts with, if you're not going to compete for 50-50 pucks below the goal line, you're not going to have the puck, and it all starts downhill from there.
Something the analytics people don't really seem to understand.
What's that?
Oh, when that guy was on the ice, though,
that'll go over well.
They don't, the whole idea of checking and like.
Make sure you link Bob to this conversation.
No. No, but to the extent that I'm not sure, maybe there are analytics that tell you whether a team checks well or not, but there's not
a classic case is Good Branson. You know what?
Willie Mitchell was freaking out.
Oh, so was the coach.
And Gerard Gallant.
Yeah. Because you know why? He was tough to play again. He was tough in front of the net. Roberto Luongo wasn't happy either. But the analytics people were like, this guy's terrible. You got to get rid of him. Well, let's see what happens.
But I don't know if there's – quite aside, I'm not talking about Gudbranson in this situation, because I think at times his game hasn't been where it's needed to be, even close, since he got to Vancouver anyways. But now, of course, he's injured anyways. But I'm not sure what metric you necessarily use. And when I talk to – the head coaches and the really established head coaches in the National Hockey League over the last number of years, the one thing they talk about and the word they use all the time is checking. Can we check? What do we do when we don't have the puck to get it back? Because I do subscribe to the theory that a defenseman who can move the puck and get it out of his own end and doesn't play a lot of defense is an advantageous player to have versus somebody who does his best work when the other team has the puck. So I understand why Good Branson and Chris Russell and all these guys get damned with faint praise on the numbers side of things. But every coach I've talked to, and all these coaches are headed for the Hall of Fame, they all want players that can check. And checking simply is when you don't have the puck, getting it back from the other team.
Right.
And a lot of times, checking is just hard work and physical play and being able to separate somebody from the puck.
I'm thinking Leafs, it could be
and the Leafs haven't
tonight.
Been very good at it lately.
No, they haven't been. And they haven't really been great at it all year. They've gone up and down, but at this point it appears as if they're looking for shootouts every night. And as a guy just sitting on the couch watching, I'll say this, it's thoroughly entertaining. And I kind of hope it happens again tonight on TSN 4. Dallas taking on Toronto. You guys will be on the panel. Thanks for popping by. Bob, we'll see you later in the week.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, we'll catch you on the panel tonight, buddy.
You going to be able to man this ship on the way home?
Oh, yeah, man. I got a lot of hot takes coming over the
Oh, you planet. Actually want 20 minutes to yourself?
I would happily take it. I got a lot of things to say.
All right, buddy. Go ahead.
All right, man. I'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. Monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. All right, I'm solo in here, and I love it. I'm always waiting for this to happen. In case you're wondering, Noodles was supposed to be in Ottawa tonight. He had to pull the shoot. He got sick last night. Steph's sick. She's not here either. And Jonas was in here. He left. He's on his way down to the ACC. It'll probably take him about 2.5 hours, considering the weather and the roads, apparently. Even though I've been in the studio, I have been hearing what Adjua has been saying. Sounds like it's ugly out there almost everywhere in the city. And the O-Dog's off because he's on the panel tonight. So he and Bobby Mack just left. So I'm solo. Brian Hayes show kicking off. This happens every once in a while. Let me get to my best bets brought to you by Proline. I'm looking at the hockey board tonight. Pittsburgh gets past Calgary. I'm going under the number in two more games. Under the number Washington, Carolina tonight. Under the number Tampa, L.A. Throw down 20 and you can score $77. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. Proline, get way into the game. I've not mentioned the Raptors win last night. And the Clippers are not the same team without Chris Paul. But what became evident last night, and I think this was evident throughout their slide, not excusing the slide, I've been difficult on this team recently, but the Raptors are not the same without DeMar DeRozan going off, and that's exactly what happened last night. This is a team that needs both guys to be going, because if you find a way to shut down one of them, Kyle Lowry is not LeBron, he's not Dwayne Wade in his prime, he's not Kevin Durant, and neither is DeMar DeRozan. They are very good players. I've said this many times. Very good players. They're all-time great Raptors, but they're not all-time great players. They cannot carry a team on their own. They need the other guy to be there from a decoy standpoint or simply to put up the numbers when the games start to get a little bit out of control, and that's what went down last night. DeMar and Kyle both had great nights. Valanciunas had a great night, and all of a sudden the Raptors have won two in a row, and they start to feel a little bit better about themselves. And I think we've known that reality for quite some time, but they are a two-man team. And they've got the depth to fill in around them, but without one of the two guys going off and without both of them in the lineup, this team becomes mediocre very quickly. And when DeMar got injured, this team became mediocre very quickly. They're off tonight. The Leafs are back in action tonight. Dallas is in town. This feels like it could get ugly. Leafs are coming off a long road trip, six-game road trip. They played last night. I think they left the rink likely feeling as if they disappointed themselves, up 4-2 and up 5-4 with 2 minutes to go, and they find a way to squander a point against a team that they're in a fight with for a wild card spot. Dallas was sitting there waiting for them. Curtis McElhinney's playing tonight. But let's be honest, this is thoroughly entertaining. When you consider where the Leafs were this time last year and where Leaf fans were this time last year, it is night and day. They were the most boring team I have ever witnessed in my life a year ago. As predictably boring, as predictably bad as you can possibly find. They didn't have one game that was even half as interesting as the one last night during the 2015-2016 season, let alone the game on Saturday night in Boston, which was even more entertaining. So even if it is a shootout tonight, I know Babcock is going to hate it. He wants his team to play better defensively. And long-term, if they are going to be a competitive team and have any shot at turning that corner and moving towards being a championship-caliber team, they have to be better defensively. We all know that. That's calling a spade a spade. But in the moment, they're not capable of playing that game. So you have to compensate for your deficiencies. And the way they do that is by playing a run-and-gun style, and they're capable of scoring on any team in the league. And this Dallas defense is brutal. Their goaltending is awful. Lindy Ruff is not a guy who demands defense out of his team. I feel like if the Leafs are going to win tonight, they're going to have to win maybe 5-4, maybe 6-5. But if you're a fan, take advantage. Because if they become a more predictably winning and successful team in the future and actually get to that championship caliber, they're not going to do it playing the style that they're currently playing. Now, I think it'll be more entertaining if you have that belief they're going to get to the playoffs and they have a chance to go for a Stanley Cup. Ultimately, that is the goal you're looking for if you're a Maple Leaf fan. But it feels like we are in a certain segment of this timeline in terms of this rebuild and this pursuit of a championship that is essentially a high wire act every single night. Every single night, you absolutely have to take antacids at the end of the game just to make sure that you can fall asleep, because you can never feel comfortable during the game. You come alive. You get out of your seat because they're going to score goals. They're going to give up bad goals. I mean, last night, even when Nylander scored that goal to go up 5-4 with 2 minutes left, I didn't believe they were going to win that game in regulation. Not for a second did I think they were going to win it. The only reason I was celebrating that goal is I felt comfortable they were going to get to overtime and at least get a point. And that is not championship conducive, but take advantage of it while you can, because it's thoroughly entertaining. All right, time now for our best bets, brought to you by Babsox.
Overdrive, 3 stars of the day.
Did I go late? I think I'm already late. Okay, anyway. Third star, Joe Narsa and Mullen behind the glass for stepping up big time today. Second star, Claude Julien. He deserved better than that greasy move today by the Bruins. And Gronkowski for his shirts off, Stone Cold Steve Austin routine at the parade down in Boston. And first star, of course, would be me. I have to take advantage. I'm the only guy in here. Overdrive, 3 stars of the day is brought to you by Babsox. Add a little grit to your wardrobe with hockey this game day ritual. Pull up your Babsox and support the team. I am out of here. I will be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. I will chat then.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot for that look into sports, Brian.
Yeah.